I'm Matt.
And I'm Victoria.
And this is When Gathering Light.
Join us as we gather stories, resources, and hope, with plenty of tears and laughter along the way, in partnership with our true source of light, Jesus. Up ahead, there is a time for weeping. Up ahead, there is a time for healing.
Up ahead, there is a time for singing. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us for this episode of When Gathering Light. We're excited to be here with our guest, Lori Bohr. Lori is a colleague of mine at Renew Counseling Ministries, and I would love for you, Lori, to just tell us a little bit about who you are and your background.
Well, hi. I'm very excited to be here. We've loved the podcast so far, and my 14-year-old loves it too, just to put a shout out. And
shout out to Avery.
Yeah. I started being interested in social work, going to school for social work, getting my undergrad in California, and doing some social work, working for foster kids. Moved to Ohio with my young family and started prison ministry for about the last 19 years, and have done chaplaincy in the community, and went and got my graduate degree and moved from grief counseling to clinical counseling. So now I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. Mm.
And it would be interesting to discuss the wounded child that is stockpiled in some of our prisons and jails across the country. I'm sure there's many of those who are, you know, small boys and girls who are in adult situations. I'm sure you saw a lot of wounded children in that environment.
That's a good imagery, Matt, about the wounded child behind bars, because it's, you have these people in the surface behind bars, but then you connect with them, and there is definitely a wounded child jailed within as well, and lots of trauma and lots of past, and trying to get down to that wounded child that is so suffocated in that environment. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to the radio the other day, and they said that these two teenagers had shot and killed some people at a party, and they said they will be tried as adults. And I'm like, yeah, but they're not adults. So it's kind of a weird, place we go with that. It's like some politicians running for office saying they'll be tried as adults, but they're 15 years old. So,
yeah, it's like this strange dichotomy between adult behavior and driven by that wounded child within.
You're right.
And so it can be convoluted in the legal system for sure.
Yeah.
I love that. Lori and I just recently were having a conversation on our lunch hour. And we were talking about the wounded child and the different ways that people will describe them. Some will say inner child, some will say exiled child, some will just say little. There's so many different ways of explaining it. For this podcast, for this purpose, we're going to try and stick with wounded child. But we just had this great conversation about the different ways that you can approach that child and how we utilize that in therapy and the different ways that we interweave it with the techniques that we use. And so I'd love for you, Lori, to tell me a little bit about how you will approach this with your clients.
So one example is if I'm talking to a client and they're discussing something with their husband or some kind of behavior they're trying or addiction they're trying to recover from, and I hear them talking, and it can sound like a teenager or a little child, and I'll be able to say they've just come in. They don't really know internal family systems and the way that we do our trauma therapy, but I'll just point it out like, wow, how old does that feel right now as you're saying that? How old do you feel as you're saying, well, that's really silly, and that just sounds so stupid? And then, and when I point it out, it kind of sounds like a teenager having a little mild tantrum there. Yes, yes, that's where I'm coming from. And so then you kind of bring that awareness in. And then I start to talk about how we have these parts of ourselves. You have the true self, and the true self is in the center, but we have these protectors that protect these wounded child parts of ours. And so through therapy, we have this unfolding and organic process of just building this language to bring that wounded child out and to feel free and to be healed so that adult self can lead and communicate with the ones they love in their life in an adult way, right? So it sounds so simple as I'm saying it, but it's quite a few sessions to get there.
Right. That's such beautiful language. And it was interesting because earlier this afternoon when Matt and I were prepping for today, I definitely think our wounded children were fighting at the lunch table. Don't you think, Matt?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think, what was your wounded child saying to me that he didn't feel listened to? Is that right?
Yeah.
And do you remember what I said about mine?
No. My inner child doesn't listen very well. So he does speak well, but he doesn't listen very well. Tell us about that, Victoria.
I'm not going to say it. But anyways, back to that conversation. It's true because, you know, it's so important to recognize when our wounded parts or our littles or those parts of us that we've exiled are in the space, and how sometimes we will reenact even onto ourselves those spaces. So what I had told Matt is that, you know, sometimes I will feel like I'm the problem. And so I will own things that I shouldn't own. And that comes from that, like, you know, young part within me. And so sometimes I can be the meanest to myself. And so it's just interesting, Laura, if you can talk a little bit about that concept and that reenactment concept.
Mm-hmm. And when we get so angry at our inner child, like we'll talk about a behavior or something that's going on in therapy, and so I just wish that part of me would go away. I just want that part of me to go away. I don't want to feel it anymore. I don't want to deal with it anymore. But what we're saying is we don't want you, wounded child, to be a part of our life, right? And so we flip the switch on it and say, let's change the way we're asking the question. Can we just say, hey, that younger part, what do I need to feel like I'm getting a need met? Or how can I nurture you in a way that feels like I can move towards healing? But our natural response is that because our wounded child is wounded, we don't necessarily have the best parenting. And so we can start to parent that part of us, whether we shut out or we close the voice out or we don't listen, we can start to do that to ourselves. And so we're just flipping the switch and saying, let's pay attention to what we need by the behavior and by the way we're communicating to our loved ones, you know, maladaptive behaviors. Let's pay attention to that and let's flip the switch and say, oh, there's grace for that. Not only does God have grace for that, but I can have grace for that and in a sense parent myself so that wounded child can feel free to be themselves.
Can you explore a little bit what a maladaptive approach would be?
So a maladaptive approach would be we have a part that might be an inner critic. And so women will, not every woman, but women who come and sit on my couch will say, I hate myself for doing this, or I wish I didn't do this. And there's this self-loathing that's going on that's so counterproductive to healing, but they think it's helping them from being vulnerable. And they're protecting that wounded child from being vulnerable and being criticized like they were when they were little. So we're flipping the switch and saying, hey, you're okay. Like, you get to have feelings and you get to feel the feelings and you can be vulnerable and we're going to give you space for that instead of saying, I wish I could, I wish I could just do this and I wish I could fix this. That inner critic can then step aside and we can let that inner child like move through their life the way that they're meant to move through their life in health, in freedom, in space.
Kind of moving from anger to curiosity, maybe.
That's exactly it. Anger to curiosity. We're asking, how can we help you? What do you need? Instead of saying, you know, go away. You're not welcome.
Yeah. No judgment.
No judgment. We love our littles. I love my little. My little is this, you know,
she's
youngest
here.
Of seven. She's like, so has a big smile on her face and she can be messy and she's used to being taken care of by her older brothers and sisters. And so, yeah, it's one thing to be critical and say, oh, I should be this more organized and I should be a better mom and a better therapist and all these things. And the other hand, it's like, wow, you're like so fun and creative, and it's okay. It'll get done when it gets done. And that's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the triggers that you see in your office? What, you know, because an adult walks in, right? And there's some dialogue and you're working on some kind of healing plan. But what are some of the triggers that launches that child reaction?
A huge trigger that I see in some women is a loud, harsh voice from the husband, or passive aggressiveness from a friend, or feeling like you've made the same mistake over and over again, whether it's an addiction or over-controlled behaviors or some OCD things. It's like you can't seem to get it right or measure up. And that seems to be a big trigger for my clients.
Yeah, I'm curious how you would integrate IFS into that space. You know, what would it look like? Or even some of the other therapies that you utilize when you're noticing that into that space.
So one of the things I like to do is to normalize that part and to separate it out and say, oh, that's your angry part, or that's your OCD part, or whatever part it is, instead of create this disease model or symptom model. It's like, oh, that's just a part of you that reacts this way. And there's another part of you that's very still healthy and intact and right in there. And so we'll normalize that and we'll say, it's okay. That's just a part of you. And then another part is the deeper issue of the nervous system. Like, what's bringing on that fight or flight? How can we do some body work to help you regulate and ground your emotions and be able to settle that wounded child? Because the wounded child is very deep in that nervous system. It's where we store all of our, threats and hypervigilance. And so helping them identify that too, those are usually the step one and two with my clients.
I love that with the somatic work, because so often with attachment and with regulation and attunement, if any of those concepts were missing, you will often find that the client is looking for you, or, you know, to do that for them. And so you're modeling some of that, but you're with them for such a short period of time. And so they need to learn how to do that for themselves. And so it's addressing, even if it's an infant, you know, I've had clients in my space that are very young, and just allowing them to wrap themselves up in a blanket or put the weighted lap cover on them, or grab some of my stuffed animals, or do something in my office that will provide them with that soothing, that regulation, that comfort, that release.
That's right. That's right. And I think also we can attune to other people. And so we can have a trigger just in our nervous system. We have no idea what's going on, but somebody has a smell or a vibe or a song that comes on that reminds you of a past trauma. Mm. And then your nervous system is dysregulated and in fight or flight, which we have to look at the body and help it in the body, because in our mind, we have no idea what's triggering us. And so that somatic work's really important, especially with the little nuances of some chronic traumas. It's all around you, whether it's food that you're eating, the smell, the music, somebody's wearing a red sweater, you know, that your grandpa always used to wear. Like, we just don't know where the triggers are going to come from. And so we're not willing away the triggers. We're taking care of them and nurturing them in our nervous system and doing some body work.
But some of those triggers could be positive triggers too, right? They could have memory triggers that, you know, create memories that are really positive. Those, for me and my work, in healing, have been things that I've highlighted, you know, and been a part of, like going to a ball game with my dad, or, you know, things like that, that are triggered by outside events into, you know, good memories. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, my grandmother was very bougie with her perfumes and makeup, and she worked for Estee Lauder and just was really into fashion. And so we would always fight over who got to have grandma spend the night in their bed, because the pillow would smell like perfume for like 3 days. Mm-hmm. So whenever I smell a scented pillow or a perfume, it just washes over me. It was a great experience being her granddaughter.
Yeah, I love that. I remember when I was doing some healing work with my little who was hospitalized at the age of 5. And it was almost scary for me to go back and think of her because of the dynamics around it. And I avoided it and just thought the story would be really scary back there. And then when I actually went back with my therapist and looked at it and explored, I found so many things that were still true to my personality. And Matt, you brought it up the other day where you said, yeah, here she is in this body cast and, you know, she's isolated and kind of in that space, but she has the biggest smile on her face and she's happy-go-lucky to get all these pictures in her room that, you know, I had drawn. So we forget that these wounds block the ability to see the joys or the resiliency that child was building around them. And so I think that's really powerful to go back and to see the spaces that they were resilient.
I love to do that in prayer time with formational prayer and bringing the Lord into the space and allowing that self-compassion, that adult self to be in the imagery with the wounded child. And there will be something positive that comes up or that Jesus could bring up that says, oh, but over here, we weren't focusing over here because we were covered by this trauma part. And so that'll unfold sometimes in therapy where they're like, I forgot that Aunt so-and-so was over here and did this for me. Or things will come up because we've kind of moved over that muck and the mire of the trauma. And the light comes in and drowns out the darkness a little bit. And Jesus says, oh, no, but wait, but over here, you know. And they can come up when they're doing that. They can come up with these memories that they didn't have that are targeting a different part of their brain that just brings in that positive freedom for that wounded child to see, oh, wait, it wasn't all bad.
You know, Lori, I have a question of how you would address this with clients because I know that there's a lot of people maybe who are listening to this and they have these inner, you know, wounded children within them or child within them. And they don't know how to maybe interact with family members or people in their adult life because that wounded child is so vulnerable. So can you share a little bit about that? Like maybe being around parents or being around a sibling or just something that would be activating to them, even if their boss is activating.
I like to bring out their self-advocate to say, you get to choose and you get to create your own territory, even if you're walking back into your parents' home or with the boss and you're going to be triggered and you know you're going to be triggered, but you're going to walk into it anyway. You get to have those boundaries in place and you get to advocate for yourself in that moment. And that true self, that eternal self gets to come in and have self-compassion as you're walking in. Some people will naturally say, you're okay, I'm okay, I'm going to be okay, right? But we're really telling our wounded child they're going to be okay. And so you're being present with the wounded child as you're coming into this with adult boundaries. And that's just such a great combination to walk into something that might otherwise be something of a trigger that would drown you and you'd have to leave.
Now, Lori, is it appropriate to have some separation from difficult situations like family until you can get healthier so that when you're in that environment, you can, you know, be good to yourself? You know, I've talked to a few of the guys in my, you know, addiction world, and they're kind of forced into ongoing traumatic situations, and they don't feel like there's any buffer at all, you know. So I usually recommend considering some separation instead of continuing to be dragged down into those environments.
You know, when the boundaries are going to be disrespected and crossed over, and then we're unable to meet the needs of the wounded child, the only buffer is separation. But to re-traumatize and to walk in that wounded child and say, okay, you're exposed simply because you're trying to people please or be the good son or daughter, you know, really walking in and saying, I actually choose not to go. I choose to like take some space. It's a very healthy choice. And it can influence reconnecting later down the line. It can actually be healthy for the family involved as well, because it sets a boundary to say, you now get to choose how you're going to behave with me. Mm-hmm. It's a very adult boundary to set. And so absolutely separation can be needed. And the client leads that, you know, and we honor that for our clients when they come in.
And that's a skill set that you can teach someone.
Yes, the boundary work is usually very important alongside internal family systems, informational prayer, and somatic work, because we tend to be boundary-less because we're victimized.
Mm. Yeah, Victoria and I were talking a little bit about that before, and how we don't get to control the other person, mm-hmm. or the other group. Or participants, you know, they're not in our control, but we do get to control our own actions. And do we show up, and, you know, do we have boundaries and things like that?
That's right.
Yeah, Lori, I was thinking about how you begin to do some of the healing, sacred healing work with the wounded child. Can you explore a little bit about that and how you may integrate your faith into that?
Mm-hmm. First, I always allow the client to lead with their own faith and their own faith practices. And as far as we can go, we allow God to be present in the session and to speak truth and light into the situation as we're doing imagery work and clinical work that can help reprocess some of these memories. We bring the Lord in to do the work of the Savior, that His wounds cover our wounds, right? And so we bring that in as long as the client is willing. And I'm a big proponent on not bringing Jesus in to show us where He was during that trauma, because I think that can be counterintuitive, but to bring Jesus in with the adult self and walk that wounded child out of that part and bring her or he into freedom is how the Lord usually presents Himself in my sessions. Is He's coming as a rescuer. He's not coming in to say, I was there and I didn't do anything. He's coming in to say, no, but we're going to go in together with the eternal self, and we're going to walk that sweet little girl out of that trauma. And we're going to start to work on those boundaries, because she no longer has to hide herself for fear of being victimized again.
Yeah, you know, Victoria and I were talking the other day about Thomas in the Bible, and how it's, at least my perspective was, that it's often read as if Thomas was weak and Thomas didn't have faith and Thomas, you know, was the doubting Thomas. And we really agreed that Thomas was curious. Thomas wanted more information. Thomas wanted some cold hard facts he could get his mind around. And we started to have some appreciation for Thomas, mm-hmm. you know, for being in a very difficult situation where he had to openly admit that he struggled, you know, and I think we ended up agreeing that we all struggle.
That's right.
Faith is not as simple as just saying, I believe, you know. And it was really an eye-opening experience of an old story that we saw one way that, and I think that's true with a lot of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to revisit some things, you know, that really weren't maybe the way we, or maybe not completely the way we remember mm-hmm. them.
That's right. And one thing about Thomas is he trusted the Savior to ask the questions. And that's what we want to do in therapy, is we want to create a safe space so they can ask the questions mm-hmm. in the presence of God. Mm-hmm. Where is that safe space if we don't have it? And for Thomas to go and say, no, let me, tell me what I don't get it. I don't understand. Tell me. He must have trusted the Savior enough to know that he could ask.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes the missing link for people in trauma, is they don't have the safe space to ask.
Well, this whole concept of coming back from the dead was a bit new at the time,
yes.
Right? I mean, a little bit. Thomas was startled by it all, mm-hmm. like I would be. You know, I can read myself right into that part.
Yeah. I would be too.
Yeah.
It's the intellectual part that says, no, well, I'm not getting it.
Right.
I'm not wrapping my head around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely would have needed to touch his wounds if I was there. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the image of Thomas touching the wound in his side where he was stabbed, and feeling that hole and feeling the missing flesh and the scar and the indentation or the holes in his hands, right? And I think that's really powerful when we're doing inner wounded child work, because I think that we think we're going to go back and instead of actually helping that child come forward, and they may bear the scars of the story, but they are not enslaved by the story or the circumstances or what happened to them. And so I think for me, when I'm coming alongside a client and they're able to do that, even in my own work, even in my friend's work, my husband's work, and when we see that and we see that child come forward, it's so powerful. Lori and I, we talk about this, how we can bring out each other's littles.
We do. We really do.
We do. We have lunch every Tuesday together. And it's actually pretty cute. I mean, I think we go back and kind of heal our wounds from our elementary or probably middle school. My middle schooler mm-hmm. usually appreciates that she has a lunch buddy. Mm-hmm. And we take care of each other.
That's exactly it. And we're pretty silly, which, you know, that's an inner child. You know, we're pretty like silly and bop around. And maybe some people obviously look at us funny, but we have like matching decoder rings and
oh, boy.
We do.
I may be finding out more information than I need to know.
Oh, that's good. Thanks for making me laugh. Well, I think it's...
But it's a safe space.
That's right.
Exactly.
With safe people doing, you know, in a safe space. So that's, you know, that's pretty cool.
Well, right. Because when our little comes out, it's a healthy thing, but our little doesn't lead. Because our adult selves are present, our adult selves are giving space for those parts of us to be realized in this world. It's like I've said before, you know, we will default to these false selves or these protective parts and almost banish or exile those younger, almost pure parts of ourselves.
Fragile.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer fragile, right? And I think really that when the true self can be trusted, like Thomas trusted Jesus, that wounded child can trust the adult part of us to lead the system, then they get to play and be silly and do all those things because they know we don't have to parent, we don't have to be over responsible, we don't have to make sure that things go okay or behave in a certain way. We have the adult part of us that can lead very well. And that wounded child's updated in that and knows that. And so then it can just be playful and be fun and feel safe at it.
Mm. Yeah, even if that adult yet doesn't know what to do in situations, they're capable to discover it, figure it out, explore it, ask questions, seek it out, like do whatever it is they have to do, which frees that young part of them so that that part isn't burdened with the problem.
That's right. Mm.
So as we begin to turn the corner and wrap up, Laura, I'd love for you just to share a little bit about how you feel about this work that you're doing with your clients and maybe just a little bit more about what it means to you personally.
Mm-hmm. I felt called to counsel and nurture women in the community for many years. And over the years, it's unfolded in different ways for me as far as social work and prison ministry and rehab and grief counseling and chaplaincy. And I've just come full circle to be able to be equipped to be present and be that kind of guide that the Lord works through to release these prisoners, to set these prisoners free. And so I feel like my theme over my life has been prison ministry, regardless of whether they're actually incarcerated or not, is that God wants to set us all free. We're none of us are immune to the trauma of this world simply because we're in the world, mm. right? And so the way that God has used me is I'm like this vessel, and the more equipped I have become, the more he can use me to set those captives free. And that is a joy to watch and be a witness to, and to glorify him in a way that also meets the need for me to engage in my talents and gifts that God has given me. So it's just been full circle in my life, going from homeschooling mom to, you know, ice skater to this to that. And now I feel like I'm finally where I need to be professionally. And that feels spiritually right. Mm. You know, when God has you in the right place, it just feels grounded. And then to be at Renew and surrounded by like-minded people and trained in the same way, it feels like we're a mission in movement that is clinically based, but also feels like I can trust the system there as well. So I just feel safe. Does that make sense? Like, not only my wounded child, but my teenager, my, you know, every part of me just feels like this is where I'm supposed to be, and I get to watch it unfold in my clients, and that's so life-giving.
Mm. Nice. Yeah, I just think that we have so many exiles, so many adults running around with these poor, stunted children who they, you know, wanna let out. And I think, you know, just having you know, an outlet, having a way to work through that, you know, and because I think it would enhance so much of their life, you know, and allow them to be more playful and more, you know, open to what God has to offer, you know, because God's spectrum is much wider than our imagination, you know. So it's and I think just being a parent would probably be enhanced greatly too, because now you can accept your child on some new levels, you know, that because you're accepting your own self on that level. So it's I've done some of the work, I know some of the results, and I think it's pretty cool stuff. So thanks for being here. Really, really have enjoyed listening to you.
You're welcome. If you scrape it all down and get it down to this one little piece of it, is the truth will set you free. And you're on a path of self-discovery when you learn your wounded child and the Lord is in it, and the truth will set you free, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, Lori, for joining us.
You're welcome.
For continuing our lunch conversation. And we are excited that you were here. And hopefully you'll get to join us again for some further discussion. Until next time, we say goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Time for healing. Up ahead, there is a time for healing.